But I would also like to read concerning this coming of the Son of Man from Matthew 28, in which Jesus declares here very emphatically, Matthew 28:18, "And Jesus came and spake unto them, saying, All power is given unto me in heaven and earth." And he gives the commission to the apostles. But he says, "All power is given me in heaven and earth." This is the time in which Jesus was given all power. After his resurrection and just before his ascension into heaven, or about the time he ascended into heaven, he received all power in heaven and in earth. And we read over in Acts, the first chapter, when he had spoken these things, while they yet beheld, he was taken up, and a cloud received him out of their sight. Now, let's look then back at what Daniel says. "One like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven, and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him." Now, came with the clouds of heaven, we don't know whether that means he came towards heaven or he came towards earth. But he came with the clouds of heaven, and he came with, that way going towards heaven. But Daniel says that he came to the Ancient of Days, which would have to be wherever God was. That would be heaven to me, in my way of thinking. And they brought him near before him. That is, near before God. And we know that he sat on the right hand of the throne of God. And there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom. Well, Christ said, "All dominion and all power is given to me in heaven and in earth, that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed." So I prefer to think that these verses 13 and 14 are referring to Christ as he began his reign in his kingdom about the time he ascended into heaven. He went in the clouds. He came near to the Ancient of Days. He was brought in the near vicinity of him. He sat on the right hand of him. And at that time he declared, "All power is given to me in heaven and earth." This says that he was given dominion and glory and a kingdom that all people and nations and languages should serve him. And shortly after that, you know, there he was proclaimed to 17 languages, 17 nations. So this is a very, very perfect description of the kingdom of heaven. But to understand it properly, you have to realize that it doesn't always come in the same sequence. We've already had the Ancient of Days who came and judged and destroyed the beast. But then we went back and looked at the other beasts, and we saw how that their dominion was taken away, but they lived for a time and a season. And during this time then, Christ came and was received up in the clouds and was given the dominion and the kingdom and glory and all that. Verse 15, "I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit in the midst of my body, and the visions of my head troubled me." Now that's a very similar feeling that you and I get as we read through these visions of Daniel and fail to understand as like we'd like to understand. Hard to understand. And so it troubles us. It seems like we've got all the parts here, but it's a little difficult to know just how to put them together and get the right sequence. The vision troubled Daniel. And Daniel, in the last verse, he says, "Hitherto is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my cogitations much trouble me, and my countenance changed in me, but I kept the matter in my heart." Daniel was troubled over these visions. His face changed color even. His mind bothered him because he couldn't quite figure out all the meaning of it. "I came near unto one of them that stood by," verse 16, "and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me and made me know the interpretation of the things." Now we're going to get an interpretation of some of these things. "These great beasts, which are four kings, which shall arise out of the earth." Well, you know, we discussed that when they came up out of the great sea that had been troubled by the wind from heaven. They came up out of the great sea. Well, that was the four kings that came up out of the earth. "But the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever." Well, I think that's just showing a sequence. After the four kings rose up, then Christ set up his kingdom, and the saints then had a kingdom that was going to last forever and ever. Just as in the great image that Nebuchadnezzar saw, had the four kingdoms represented there, and then the God of heaven created a stone out of the mountain without hands, and this stone then dashed the other kingdoms to pieces, and it became his mountain that lasted forever. Then I would know the truth of the fourth beast. Now he's going back. John wants to go back and examine a part of this thing a little bit more closely. Up there earlier we had the destruction of the fourth beast, but now John's coming back and he wants to look at, magnify the fourth beast. Tell me more about it. I want to know the truth about the fourth beast. Daniel said. I said John, but I mean Daniel. It's real easy to say John here. Then I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was diverse from all the others, and exceeding dreadful. Now he goes back and looks at this fourth beast. He was different from the rest, and was exceeding dreadful, is the description given, whose teeth were of iron, and his nails of brass, which devoured, break in pieces, and stamped the residue with his feet. He devoured, break in pieces, and stamped the residue with his feet. And in this verse here, he says that he has nails of brass. Nails that are brass. Teeth that are like iron. And he just devoured and he stamped in pieces the residue with his feet. I remember reading a book this summer about the grizzly bears up in Glacier Park. This one grizzly that came in into a camp, and he tore open a pack that they had, and they had cans of milk and beans and so on, and this bear just took these cans and just broke them open with his teeth. Just chewed the can open with his teeth and not bother him at all. And you just can't imagine how anything could do this, how anything could be this powerful and strong. Well, we have a beast that's described something like that. These grizzly bears are supposed to have claws that are just like knives. They can just hack and cut anything to pieces just with their claws. And well, we have a beast now that's got claws with like brass and teeth like iron. And of the 10 horns that were in his head, and of the other which came up, before whom 3 fell. Now, that's that horn, you know, we call the Catholic Church. Even of that horn that had eyes and a mouth that spake very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows, I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them. Now let's look here just for a minute at this beast that he's describing. I want to read just a moment from Revelation 13 and show you what a real close tie-in we have here with Revelation and Daniel. This cannot be a coincidence. This has to be a description of the same beast in the same image. Revelation 13, beginning with the first verse, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion." Got these other 3 kingdoms now described in there, which all went in to make up this Roman Empire. What did he say that he had? He was like a leopard, his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. So we got the lion, the bear, and the leopard all incorporated into this beast. That's no coincidence that he had named those 3 beasts being incorporated into this one beast. And also the fact that he had the 10 horns on his head. "And I saw one of the heads as it was wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. And they worshipped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? And there was given to him a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and power was given him over all kindreds, tongues, and nations. But they that dwell on the earth and all they that dwell on the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of the life book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If any man have an ear, let him hear. Now that's the first part of the 13th chapter, and the last part describes the other beast that rose up, which is the Catholic Church, and which worked hand in hand with the first beast. Well, we won't read about that one right now, but they're so closely related. Well, this Catholic Church was one of the horns that this beast had, and then he was given three of those other kingdoms to rule over, and he actually assumed then a political power. So verse 21, "And I beheld the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom." Now this verse 22 is a little bit difficult still again for me. When did the Ancient of Days come? Did the Ancient of Days come in the Judgment Day? Is this the end of time? Or did the Ancient of Days come here in a secondary judgment, which would be the time of the Reformation? And at that time then, a judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. That is, the saints would come into possession of the kingdom. Thus he said, "The fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon the earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, and shall tread it down, and break it in pieces. And the ten horns out of this kingdom are ten kings that shall arise, and another shall rise after them, and he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue three kings." Now here again, we just have another picture of it, the ten kings, and then this other one that rose up, this other horn, subdued three kings, and became a power itself. Another horn, Christ a church, verse 20, "And he shall speak great against the Most High, wear out the saints, and think the times and laws, and shall be given unto his hand until a time and times and the dividing of time." Now this time and times and dividing of time, that happens to be, you know, the year and years and a half year, or the 3.5 years, or the 42 months, or the 1260 days, or the 1260 years. Just like we read in Revelation. He said he was going to be given his power for 42 months. And that's spoken of over there several times. Well, here he says he's going to have this time and times and the dividing of time, which is a year and 2 years and a half a year. And certainly this Catholic Church has done all of these things. Shall speak great words against the Most High. Well, we read about that in Thessalonians a while ago. And shall wear out the saints of the Most High. That is just going to overcome and subdue and prevail over them, wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws. They change times and laws. They set up their own seasons for worship, and this is where we get into such things as the Halloween and the Lent and the Easter and the Christmas and the St. Patrick's Day and the St. Valentine's Day. They set up their own times and their own seasons. And their own laws. They've got their own laws about how to commune and how to do this and how to do that. And they shall be given into his hand until a time and times and dividing of time. That is, the saints are going to be controlled by or overruled by this other horn. Now, Mr. Clark, let me read what he says about this. Everything he says is not exactly right, but he certainly had the right idea, as he was giving the comment on this. Verse 25, this is his comment. "To none can this apply so well or so fully as to the popes of Rome." Now this is written in 1825. "They have assumed infallibility, which belongs only to God. They profess to forgive sins, which belongs only to God. They profess to open and to shut heaven, which belongs only to God. They profess to be higher than all the kings of the earth, which belongs only to God. And they go beyond God in pretending to loose whole nations from their oath of allegiance to their kings when such kings do not please them. And they go against God when they give indulgences for sin. This is the worst of all blasphemies." Then his quote, his comment about shall wear out the saints by wars, crusades, massacres, inquisitions, persecutions of all kind, what in this way have they not done against all those who have protested against their innovations and refused to submit to their idolatrous worship? He calls their ways innovations. Well, today we're crying out against innovations in the church and their idolatrous worship. Witness the exterminating crusades published against the Waldenses and the Albigenses. Witness John Huss and Jerome of Prague. Witness the Smithfield fires in England. Witness God and man against this bloody, persecuting, ruthless, and impure church. And then about the phrase where it says, and thank the changed times and laws, appointing fasts and feasts, canonizing persons whom he chooses to call saints, granting pardons and indulgences for sins, instituting new modes of worship utterly unknown to the Christian church, new articles of faith, new rules of practice, and reversing with pleasure the laws both of God and man. So Clark had certainly the right idea, as he shows which direction this 25th verse is pointing to, what it's describing, what it's talking about here. People way back in 1825, 150 years ago, were writing such things as this about the Catholic Church. And they weren't that far out of Catholicism as we are or should be today. But the judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and to destroy it unto the end. So there's going to come a time when he is going to be destroyed. Thessalonians said he's going to be consumed or destroyed with the brightness of his coming. So judgment is coming upon this church. And as we read in Revelation, you know, he's not going to be destroyed until the end of time, till the judgment day comes. That's when he will be destroyed. And the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. Now, of course, this has to be referred to the Christian kingdom, the church. That kingdom that the God of heaven is going to set up during the Roman Empire, that kingdom which it would really destroy and break in pieces and consume all the other kingdoms, that kingdom was going to last forever and ever. That's the kingdom that he had reference to here. That one will still be in existence when all these others are destroyed and gone. And that one will really be receiving its greatest amount of glory and the greatest amount of full dominion at the time that the others are going to be completely abolished and destroyed. And they then, of course, will go into that new heavens and new earth that we read about in 2 Peter 3:13, where he says, in dwelleth righteousness. But this is going to be dominions. All dominions shall serve and obey him. It's an everlasting kingdom. So whatever power, whatever authority, whatever rule there happens to be then, it's going to be something that's in obedience to him. It's going to be subservient to him. So he closes with verse 28. Hitherto is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my cogitations much trouble me, that is his thoughts, and my countenance changed in me, that is his face or his look, his appearance, but I kept the matter in my heart. So Daniel was disturbed over his inability to completely understand and interpret and apply these things, but he kept the matter in his heart. He remembered it. He made it a part of him. It became a part of Daniel once he'd received this great vision. But we can see how far-reaching this vision is, and we can also see how that we have just really probably skimmed the surface of it tonight in giving a very rough and crude interpretation an application of it. Many of the finer points, I personally am ignorant of a proper application. But we do know that it fits harmoniously with everything else that we know that's written. Everything in Revelation. everything to do with the church, everything to do with Christ and his ministry and the establishing of the church and the plan of salvation. There are probably in this interpretation, there are probably many ramifications that we haven't even touched upon, maybe even some lesser fulfillments while awaiting the greater fulfillments. This I'm not able to even comment about. But to me, it's a very fascinating reading, and it's startling. And we read Revelation, it describes this beast right down the line, just as Daniel has described it from an altogether different way. And we know it. They're talking about the same kingdom, the same times, and the same events that God is dealing with man with. But it enhances our position as Christians as we're able to look back with a perspective and see what's happened and bring it right on down to us at the present time and see where we stand and where we fit in the midst of all this. He said the little king, the little horn rather, was going to wear out the saints. He said that it was going to speak great things, and certainly this has happened. We'll conclude at that point. Does anybody have any questions or comments? If not, then Lord willing, we'll begin with the 8th chapter then next time.